coming to you
alive
through the power of the interwebs. Inside the Green Room Studio from the flagship source of the Earth Mix Garden Products Network,
it's the At Home Show
with Josh Carey and David Bates, bringing you all the wisdom
and wit
you'll ever need to tackle your garden and your projects. Now broadcasting alive from Bates Nursery and Garden Center at 3810 Whites Creek Pike, just 1 mile north of exit 19 off Briley Parkway.
Or 0.9 miles as the Josh drives.
Here's Josh Carey and David Bates.
Oh yeah, everybody knows what that music means. It's now time to climb a tree, don your loincloth, and survey the backyard. You got to find that project. You got to lay it in the unmarked grave of history. Welcome in, everybody. It is Saturday morning. It means it's time for the At Home Show. I'm Josh Carey.
And I am David Bates.
Michael Stevenson sitting to my left.
Good morning.
And Nora's in the background running the show and keeping us looking good as best she can. I mean,
within reason.
Reason?
Well, within...
She only pulls the room up.
She can only do as much as she can do.
She raises the IQ.
Whatever she has to work with, well, which is just this, it's us.
Yes, it's a Saturday morning tradition. We've been coming to you for parts of two centuries, two millennia, four decades. We're going to get in that fifth one here before too long.
I think the glare on that bald spot, Sean.
We've done some renovations in here in the green room.
Absolutely.
Over the past weekend. We're still working on tweaking the lighting. There'll be more that,
we've added
that.
Exposed rafters. We've vaulted the ceiling inside
and
the
green room. I think it's helped the look in here a lot. Certainly from this side, it feels bigger. So
come Christmas time, we can put Christmas lights up.
There you go. And we do have outlets to plug them into. Okay, let's talk about the weather here. And
Today
is Saturday, October 3rd. And we're going to have mostly sunny conditions today. A high, near 70, probably 69 degrees. It might be all that it will. But it will warm up somewhat overnight because we're going to have some clouds coming in. And tomorrow, Sunday, it will be partly cloudy. High of about 71 degrees. And still, we're going to have very light winds, maybe as much as 5 miles an hour. So pleasant conditions on Monday. Cool back down again, 66, 42 for the low, 75, 52 Tuesday. And we do see 80 perhaps on Wednesday. But beyond that, we're going to stay in the 60 to lower 70s range. Currently here in the Music City, 38 degrees. We had a light frost here
this morning.
A light frost up on top of the...
Was it more of a glaze than it was a frost?
It was just a frost. And I want to show a picture I took this morning. And this is, if you were up early and looked up towards the moon, that's the bright light you see right there. Mm-hmm. This is Mars that was just at about the 5 o'clock position today. So
you took that with your phone?
I took that with my phone, yeah.
Amazing.
So anyway, tomorrow, Mars will be ever more distant. It was yesterday, Mars was about up here, so moon will be, they'll be much further apart tomorrow. And the moon, of course, is moving, was full yesterday, not today, but still very bright and almost washes out Mars because it's so luminous. So there you go.
615-499-6690. If you want to join us, you can. You'll go right to Michael's secret bat phone, and he will. He has technology to know who you are and where you're calling.
Yeah,
from,
and we ask that you share us on your Facebook page. So if you're watching us on Facebook, please share us to all of your friends, and we'd certainly appreciate that. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can subscribe while
Jocelyn
you're there.
That and Carol are already out there looking at us, so that's great.
You can check us out right there, and you'll get a notification every week. And also, of course, since we're doing it the way we're doing it these days, no longer on the radio, if you can't quite work this into your schedule, you can watch us during the week multiple times if you just need a major fix.
And if you just want us in the car with you, you can listen to the podcast.
Yes.
And Michael puts that up weekly right after we go off the air.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Pretty much.
Yes. Okay. All righty, folks. It's a chilly Sunday morning, Saturday morning. It'll be chillier tomorrow morning. I got a feeling a little bit.
They're only saying, we're only saying 50 degrees overnight, so it will not be so cold tomorrow. But Monday morning, yes, it will be back in the lower 40s, perhaps upper 30s out here. So
now, those of us with above-ground gardens,
Now, we're growing successfully, by the way. If you go to the At Home Show with Josh Carey and David Bates Facebook page, you can see some of the bounty that has come from the above ground garden.
Let me see if I've got...
Primarily lettuces and some broccoli and some Brussels sprouts and stuff like that. But the lettuce has done exceptionally well. These cold nights, do we have to worry about them? Have to worry about frost cloths or anything?
You know, the thing that people make the biggest mistake on in gardening is lack of worry.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if you're ever in doubt, just go ahead and double up on your worry, okay. And that will help things to move right along.
Because you take the lettuce out of the garden, you clean it off, you cut the roots and everything like that, and then you put it in the refrigerator. It seems to go okay. So as long as we're not down below freezing, we should be okay?
Yes, we should be fine. And even on the cool season vegetables such as broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, kale, all of those are quite tolerant to cold weather conditions. They'll take light freezes and frost without issue. Lettuces are still a cool season plant, but cool. they will, if you get too much cold weather on them, they will.
Well, I'm going to have to harvest most of it. I mean, they all went in at the same time.
That's the whole point. You're going to eat it, right?
Well, it was delicious, too, by the way.
Would it be fair to say we're actually experiencing a real fall for once, as opposed to the 3 days of fall?
I tripped on the way in, so, I mean, does that count?
You've been drinking?
No.
Okay.
Not this morning.
Now, this actually, in recollection, I don't know when we've ever had a fall that has really happened precisely the way you would want it to happen.
It's kind of like the spring we had.
Yes. You know, aren't we all due such... given that, you know, life has been a little out of sequence, it seems, for the entirety of the year. So we're grateful to have...
2020 was due to do something right.
Well, there's something. It's just, you know, statistically, you know, something had to go well along the way. So fortunately, weather, for us anyway, hasn't been the case everywhere, to be sure. But we've been very fortunate to have favorable weather conditions here in the Middle Tennessee. So do we want to go ahead and bring up our guest?
Sure.
Here? So let me
let's switch over.
Okay, I'm going to get you up, and we want to bring to our broadcast here Jack DeVrooman. Jack DeVrooman is a longtime friend. We both had thick and much darker hair and probably several pounds less when Jack and I first got to know each other. Jack, welcome to the At Home Show this morning.
Yes, glad to be here.
I've aged, but you have not, right?
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, Jack, as you may have noticed, has got a bit of a southern accent from southern Holland, that is. Jack is a fourth generation of a bulb growing business
making my living in the bulb business. Yes.
And so why don't you give us a little, how did you, I guess it's your great great grandfather that started, or?
Yes. My great great grandfather was a bulb grower in the northern part of Holland. And my grandfather started an export business in Europe. And then my father started, after the Second World War, traveling the United States and selling bulbs.
Now, was your great-grandfather involved in when there was a period of time in history where flower bulbs took on a level of value that was, frankly, ridiculous? But
yeah,
I mean,
much more valuable than gold.
That was way earlier. That's somewhere in the 16th century.
Right.
When the tulip mania, which basically some tulip bulbs were worth more than houses were at that time.
You know, that's just really strange to think about. But
was that right around the time of the War of the Roses, like the actual historical event?
Oh, I guess
they just. I will have
to ask my wife, because she is a Brit, and
I didn't know.
So, anyway, so Jack, four generations now. Now, how old were you when you got started working in the bulb business?
Well, I went to the only horticulture college in the world that specializes in flower bulbs, which is in my hometown in Lisse, Holland. And after that, I was 18 years old, and my father took me to the United States, and he traveled with me for a week, and then he says, go at it. So all I had was an order book, a suitcase full of clothes, and a picture book. And I visited all the garden centers and nurseries and what have you in the Southeast. I was the son of the boss, so I got...
Froze up a little bit. There he goes.
Because there are a lot more bulbs sold up north than there are... Right.
Well, you were developing a territory that had never been previously developed. I mean,
and he probably paid him less because he was his son. So, I mean, that was the way it worked. You got you ate good, but you didn't stay in the best of places either.
Now, Jack, back at that point in time, how many different languages could you speak at that point?
In horticulture school, we spoke Dutch, of course, which is the native language of Holland, English, French, German. And in horticulture school, because Sweden was a big export, I also learned Swedish. So, but I haven't spoken any of it for, 45, 50 years. So,
So you just barely can do Dutch and English now, right?
Well, I'm pretty fluent at those two, yes.
Right. Now, one of my favorite stories, Jack, before we get into talking about actual bulbs, is that you shared many years ago that, you know, you had an international driver's license as a young man, and you would be driving across, you know, this expansive country we've got. And, of course, you don't have such expansive roadway systems in Holland. It's just not that big.
That's right.
You'd be out driving and, you know, getting to get out and drive fast gave you more than one encounter with the law, and then all of a sudden your fluency in English would go way down. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, this is really the story about some highway in Alabama where I got stopped by a cop, and so I stopped speaking English, and
how did they know, Jack, in Alabama?
The guy, I opened my window and he got to the window, and I had an international driver's license which had all these languages in it. And of course, I opened it in the Russian part. and he said, driver's license, you know. And I said, well, here it is. I think this is what you need. And I opened it up at the... And the guy looked at it and he said, this ain't no good in Alabama. And so he says, slow down. And he flopped my international driver's license closed and said, slow down, go on. He didn't want to deal with this now.
So welcome not only to the U.S., but mainly to the South.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about bulbs here, Jack. You know, there's a lot of confusion with people when it comes to bulbs. You know, people come in frequently in the springtime and say, I want to buy tulip bulbs. Except if you're going to plant tulip bulbs, you need to be doing that now, right?
Yes. My wife is a Brit again, and she said, you plant tulip bulbs when you wear a sweater. So it's now time to plant bulbs.
And as a...
They require a certain amount of coal.
Now, as a Brit, your wife is a member of the Real Gardeners Society. We Americans dabble in it, but the...
That's right.
She is sitting here next to me. And that's right.
Well, I was fortunate to get to go to Great Britain and tour a lot of gardens and places last year. And... it's at a much higher level than it is here in the U.S. I mean, we make a pretty good stab at it, but I think we frankly have too many distractions here in the United States. Gardening just can't quite make it up to the level that it is in Great Britain, and they also have much more favorable growing conditions. So it's much like the Pacific Northwest type of weather, where that it's doesn't get hot too temperate. Much, mm-hmm. and it's very very temperate. Doesn't get too cold, and a nice even amount of rainfall. So all of those things work with it. But for those of us who, you know, we're here in the South, we can have really good success in planting bulbs here, just like you do in other climates, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And you know, I have adapted over the years because my Marlboro bulb company is in Greenwood, South Carolina. And so, you know, we do a lot in bulbs that are specializing for the South. You know, there are certain tulips that do better in the South, and there are certain daffodils that do better in the South. And so, and of course, we do a whole range of spring bulbs. You know, I have an elephant ear that's named after me. It's called Jack's Giant.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yeah.
That's the exclusive one.
You know, we sell that in the springtime, and we do things special for
it. I need to get on his mailing list and get some samples is what we need to do.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, you could open up lines of communication with Jack, and he'll be able to help guide you along.
Now, you mentioned the daffodils. Now, in your bride's native country, they actually have daffodil societies, don't they? And they have shows just for daffodils like we do for roses here. Right? It's amazing because the daffodils...
There is a daffodil society here in America also.
So. Oh, is there really? Okay. But I mean,
yeah, that's big time.
I think they're based in Bellbuckle, Tennessee, because I mean, it's like a wildflower out there. There's so many of them that come up and on along right. the sides of the roads.
Michael, we sent you some photographs that, that Jack yeah. sent earlier, and, everybody knows that you plant. What are you saying?
I need to go to input three. I think
he's still on.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Josh is coaching me over here from the in between. So anyway, this graphic here, Jake, now you're currently off the screen, but this you can still talk to us. This is really a helpful graphic for so many people now live in apartment complexes or in condominiums, or maybe they've got a balcony, but they don't really have a place to plant. But bulbs are still a really good option. So tell us what we're looking at here, Jack.
Okay, we're looking at, you're probably looking at the lasagna planting.
Correct. He calls it lasagna because it's in layers, like a lasagna. It's a planter that has multiple bulbs, and so cool. Yes.
Right. You have the daffodils on the bottom.
Well, actually, you got tulips on the bottom.
Oh, you got tulips on the bottom.
And then daffodils in the middle.
You basically put them about 8 inches from the top, and you cover them up. And you leave the points of the tulips exposed so you can see exactly where they are. And then you put the daffodils on there and you cover them up. And so they're about four inches deep in your pot. Then you cover those up and you put either muscaris, grape hyacinths, or crocus on the top. And what we do in South Carolina, then plant pansies over
right.
it.
Right, or violas, any of the coolia. That's another great application because that way you can enjoy it all winter long.
We enjoy the pansies all winter long, and then in the spring, first the crocus come on, and then the daffodils, and then the tulips.
Now, so, in order to do this, you've got to have a planter that's at least about how deep, Jack? Probably.
Well, at least about. You know, 8 to 10 inches deep, yes. Yeah.
So that's amazing. What a great idea.
Yeah, and so it keeps bringing you color throughout the transition of the spring, from winter through the spring season. And
I can see window boxes with this. It would be just absolutely amazing. Just
well, if they're a deep window box, it'd be great. Yeah. But the good thing about having this, Jack, and you tell me where I'm misstating here, is that you know you've got enough soil there to actually be able to support those and provide enough. They don't need a lot of insulation, obviously, because the one thing that bulbs are very much is quite winter hardy. So the freeze problem is not much of an issue, correct?
No, that's correct. It's no issue. You know, these bulbs are all fall bulbs, which which require some cold in order for them to root. So that's the reason you plant bulbs in the fall, because they need a certain amount of cool weather It doesn't need to be freezing, but it needs a certain amount of cool weather in order to make roots.
Okay, now if you can show the other photograph now. Now what we're showing now, of course, are the paper whites with the amaryllis, which is another great indoor use of bulbs that maybe a lot of people don't think about.
These are the two kinds of bulbs that don't really require any cold. So that's why it is easy for you to grow them indoors, either paper whites. And we sell what we call a super paper white, which is because a lot of people are paper whites. They don't like the fragrance that much. And this is a bigger bulb. It makes more stems per bulb, and it makes bigger blooms. But the main reason we're selling it is because it has a milder fragrance. Because some people are...
It's a little overpowering for some
regular
people,
paper whites, but some people really don't like it. It's too strong.
Okay. Well, so there you go. And that's great for throughout the winter season. Of course, as we roll more into the Christmas holiday time, people tend to associate those kinds of things with the winter time, even though that you can certainly begin to get those bulbs down and get those planted, and it takes them a little bit to come along, but certainly you could have those in flower through much of the winter season when you've got them out there.
Michael, could we go back to the first graphic, please? I mean, I've just got a question. I just wanted to try to get something clear in my mind because, again, when we're looking at it in a two-dimensional format where we had the flower
you
pot.
You want this one or the other one?
The flower pot. The flower pot.
Oh, lasagna.
All right, hold on.
Lasagna.
Give me a second.
The first one.
Yes.
The first graphic. But when you were saying that we were going in layers, and then you mentioned early in your talk that you left the tips of the bulbs visible so you could see, do you have to stagger the bulbs to where they don't grow? You don't want to put them in perfect vertical lines, I would assume.
And that's what he's getting at, right, okay. Jack?
That's right. That's okay. Right. When you put the tulips in, just leave the tip of the tulips exposed. So you can put the daffodils where you don't have tulips.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, it doesn't really matter for the crocus or the muscari. The others come through it.
Correct. So these come up, like, over time. So the crocuses come up first, then the daffodils, and then the tulips. Is that how that works? Or is that back? Or is that the other way around?
That's how it works. Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
And then if you've planted pansies or violas on the top of them, they're already growing. They just come right up through.
Oh, nice. So that is an ingenious idea.
They come right through it. And then in the summertime when it gets hot and the pansies don't look that good anymore, we use the same pots and leave the bulbs in there. And we plant caladiums in it.
Right.
In May and June and July and August. Will give you color in the summertime.
And there's enough foliage on the caladiums that comes out that will cover the undesirable looking vegetation that comes after the fact on all those other flower bulbs, because they're not exactly glorious when they're not in bloom. So caladiums do a great job of putting out a lot of foliage and giving a lot of color without really not having, I mean, they do flower, obviously, caladiums, but they don't have a showy flower. It's mostly the foliage that is the attraction on caladiums. And they are quite hot weather bulbs. They're not very tolerant of cold weather at all, correct?
Yes. You really need to plant outside caladiums in May. So that would be an ideal time to plant, May or June.
Right.
You know, we plant thousands in our yard because my wife won't let me throw anything away from the bulb company. So we have at the moment probably 2,000-3,000 caladiums leafing out in our yard.
Oh wow!
Okay, now let's talk about your mass planting method, Jack. That we, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, get really caught up in, okay, I want to make sure they're at just the right depth and at just the right spacing. But if you are wanting to cover a rather large area and you don't want to put a lot of labor into it, how in the world can you do that?
Well, we have an acre around the house which has seven different gardens in it, and for example, we have an alcoholic where all the plants have alcoholic names, And we have a...
Do you have an ouzo so plant it's
a,
by
it,
chance?
Is it a literal beer garden?
No, we don't have a beer garden. Although there's a tulip called Heineken, so that could be in the...
Okay, there you go.
But for us, it goes in the alcoholic garden. Anyway,
very good.
We have several, you know, Patricia is a Brit, and we have a white garden, and we have a rock garden and a shade garden with hostas and what have you.
Now, do you guys do any business with the plantations around Charleston? Because
yes, you were talking about Middleton.
Yes,
last week.
Yes, I absolutely was. It was absolutely
for Middleton. We supplied the bulbs for Middleton Place.
Oh my goodness, what it's so spectacular there that the we again coming in the fall of the year, we really did miss it in its full glory, but it was still just absolutely beautiful. So,
yeah. By the way, before I forget, your company is named Marlboro Bulb Company. Now, that's not because you have a particular affection with any brand of cigarette. That's the name of the county that your business was started in, correct?
Was original from Marlboro County, South Carolina.
Okay.
It went to Wilmington, North Carolina, and then in 99 we bought the rights to it, and so that's how
the name stuck at that point, correct?
Fantastic. Yeah, you know, so anyway, I never smoked in my life, so no, it has nothing to do with the cigarette.
Well, so they come in soft packs and in boxes, I would assume.
Well, yes, that's
absolutely.
True. You can probably buy them in more. The soft pack is more like of a mesh bag.
But you really don't want to roll it up in your sleeves of your T-shirt, though.
Well, only the crocus, because they're small, or the squills, maybe. Something that's really small that you could get in there.
Jack, have you ever heard of a Schipperke dog? I imagine you saw them quite a bit as a boy. The little captains, the Schipperke dogs from Holland and Dutchland?
In the first place, you're not pronouncing it right.
No, I'm not.
You need to.
You got a hockaloogie, I guess, while you're doing it.
That's how you pronounce those kind of things. Anyway, no, I never heard of the dog. But to come back to your question about mass planting, because
that's where
like a politician, I run around the answer, you know. Whatever we have left over, my wife won't let me throw away from the bulb company. So what we do is we have certain beds that we plant things in. Okay. For example, same beds that the caladiums grow in the fall.
So the caladiums. These are the more formal type of bed areas where you kind of have a plan that you go with and you stay within guidelines.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, we have crates which carry 500 tulips or 300 daffodils that we have left. So what we do is I pick up a crate, I rake the flower bed, throw the bulbs on there, whether they're on their side or on, you know, whatever side they're up on or down. I throw them on there. I take a rake so they're not on top of each other, but
kind of separate them just a little bit.
Yes, and then I cover up with 2 to 3 inches here in South Carolina of dirt. I have a truckload of topsoil,
like sifted topsoil delivered out that'll rake easily over it.
Wow!
Right, and I plant thousands of bulbs in an hour, but you know, for home gardeners can do the same thing. What they do is. Buy at least 50 bulbs because that will make a decent show.
Right.
And then buy some topsoil or whatever. And
we
and
prefer earth mix around here. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are in South Carolina, have this red clay. And so any organic matter helps the soil tremendously.
Well, now, and because that they're not placed where that they're exactly all evenly spaced and at a, you know, spaced like manually where the bulbs may be laying over on the side, that affects their flowering time just a bit, correct?
Yes, and so you actually extend the flowering time because the ones that have their point up will bloom a week to 2 weeks earlier than the ones that are laying on their side.
And if they're upside down, of course, they bloom on the other side of the world.
In order to extend the blooming time.
So, yeah, that's another way to do that. So, well, see, there you go. So there's another little point. So if you want to plant in mass, you almost guarantee yourself of extending the flower time simply because you're putting out a lot of bulbs quickly.
Now, folks, just real quickly, if you've got a minute and you've got a question for Jack, go ahead and post it on the At Home Show Facebook page and in the comments there, and we'll try to get to them.
They can leave a voicemail, too, as well.
Hey, also, Jack, we're going to step away and do a little message here about our Earth Mix Garden products. So stand by. We'll be right back with you, and we do want to talk about Earth Mix Garden products. And no matter what you're growing, you know, you see Jack's example of a lasagna garden, that would be well done using Proganics O, the professional outdoor potting soil in a container. Anything that you're using to plant Earth Mix Garden products, we have soils that will address the needs of the plants. And, of course, they're done so 100% organically, sustainably produced, and it's done so right here in Nashville, Tennessee. But it's done so not just to be organic or sustainable. It's done to be the most productive and prolific soils, very live and viable soils. You know, we add things like mycorrhiza fungi, endo and ecto mycorrhiza, by the way, and humic acid, and other things that are all of organic derivative to assure you that you get the finest selection of microorganisms and to get the best growth out of it. And if you want to find out where EarthMix is available, well, go to earthmix.net and click on the Find EarthMix tab. And once you're there, you'll bring the page up and you'll see locations all over Middle Tennessee, Kentucky. And you just hover over any one of those, like Valley Growers 2 over there and over in Memphis, Palladio Garden and Horticulture Center. So check it out on earthmix.net. Remember this, success in gardening begins at the ground level when you use EarthMix garden products. So thank you for that moment. And we're going to go back over here to Jack now. And there you go.
He's back. Now, Jack, I've always been curious, once the flower cycle goes through, how long should we be leaving the foliage up? Because David's talked through the years about, you know, you need to store the energy to take it back down into the bulbs. I mean, is there a rule of thumb or just when you get tired of it? Okay.
Well, if you use the bulbs as annuals, you can just pull them up. And that's what a lot of landscapers do.
And frankly, where you see them in a commercial type application, and certainly in parks where you see them flower consistently every year, that's an example of where they are used as an annual, correct?
That's right.
Because the bulbs go through a life cycle and they produce little bublets. And so you're not going to get from a single planting of a tulip bulb in particular, and probably hyacinths for that matter as well, bulbs that will, you plant them once and they're going to flower the same every year. It just doesn't work that way.
Okay. No, it doesn't, unless you are in Washington State, because that, you know, that has the same climate as Holland does.
Right.
You know, but basically, if you want to perennialize some of your bulbs, then it's very important that you leave the foliage on. As long as it's green, they'll produce. In Holland, they actually cut the flowers off. Because
save the foliage to allow it to store up the energy.
Yes. I mean, one day you see a beautiful field of tulips in Holland, and then the next day you don't see anything. It's all green because they go over with those chopping machines and chop all the flowers off. My wife is horrified by that.
What a waste. I mean, and it seems like a waste, but from a
they don't sell them cut flowers. It's just a part of the process.
Well, there's no cut flower life left in them at that point. And most bulb plants are not known for how well they hold up as a cut flower. I mean, if you were cutting them and take them to market, they just don't hold up that long, right, Jack?
Well, they hold up for a couple of weeks.
Cut them at the prime time, if you're cutting them for that, but at the end of the bloom cycle, obviously there's not enough time left to get that benefit out of them.
So you might be doing well if you want to perennialize, you know, for example, cut the seed pods off the daffodils and the seed pods off the tulips, because they put energy in the seed pods.
Right.
Okay. Back
to the bulb. And when you cut the flower off on the top, and you leave the leaves on, that means it will start producing the bulb for the following year. That is really the time. The six weeks after it blooms is basically, the time that they produce the bulbs for the following year.
Now, so, Jack, you see people from time to time because they really want things to be tidy. I'll see people gather the foliage up and then double it over and put a rubber band around it because they don't want to cut it off. It's kind of defeating the purpose, right?
Well, you need more surface.
Yes. Yeah.
You got to have more surface for the sun.
They're not getting any sunlight. Yeah.
You know, if you want to perennialize bulbs, one of the important things is use a slow-release fertilizer right when the bulbs come up, because that is the time, after they bloom is really the time when they make the bulbs for the... It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to fertilize when you plant bulbs, because everything that is in that bulb,
right, so it's already stored the energy.
Okay. Right. So if you want to perennialize, you fertilize with a slow-release fertilizer. When the bulbs come up about 2-3 inches up, then you know exactly where they are. Just top dress some slow-release fertilizer, because after the bulb flowers is when it's important that they get the fertilizer and that they – make the bulb for the following year.
So most of the
rubber bands and stuff doesn't work. It basically prohibits the energy to go back in the bulbs.
Right. They might as well either make the decision to either pull them up or leave them out there so they can grow and store the energy. But you can't have it both ways, right?
And as soon as they turn yellow, you can cut them off, and because then they're done.
Okay. Okay.
So as long as you see green,
you know, Mrs. Carey, though. So I mean, she likes things to be. Once she finds something she likes to do it over and over and over again. So right. I mean, that's where I was trying to go with this.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So, getting back to the care of the bulbs, there's a fertilizers. You know, there's a fertilizer for every specific kind of plant, it would seem, in the marketplace, and the bulb boosters type fertilizer you see sold a lot. We sell some here, and as you're just stating, really the best use for that is not in the fall when you plant them, it's more in the spring after they have flowered, correct?
Yes. Everything that for that flower is already in that bulb. A bulb is never dormant, so everything is in that bulb for the flower.
Okay, let's talk about the difference in bulbs. Several years ago, the practice of pre-chilling bulbs became fashionable because a lot of people were really struggling with getting enough dormancy to get things to flower properly. So why don't you tell us about that whole process and why people might want to consider whether their bulbs are being pre-chilled or not.
Of course, what we do for landscapers that basically use the bulbs as annuals is we pre-cool them in our warehouse. And especially tulips is what I'm talking about.
Right.
Those don't really require a whole lot of cold weather. So the tulips really need about 10 to 12 weeks of cool weather in order to bloom properly.
Right.
They don't quite get the 10 to 12 weeks of cold weather. And sometimes here in the South, and of course I live in South Carolina, then the tulips will be shorter than it says on the package. You remember that the packages are made in Holland, so when it says 24 inches for a Darwin hybrid, in South Carolina you don't get a 24-inch Darwin hybrid.
So how tall would they traditionally get a Darwin hybrid comparatively? Maybe a foot? Maybe not even that?
No, yeah. With plenty of cooling, they'll get a foot and a half and what have you. So
okay. Well, that's a fact that a lot of people don't realize when they're looking at tulips, and that's why that all bulbs that you see, you know, if you just talk about the grading process for a moment, you know, you see these bags of extremely cheap bulbs, and there's a reason why they're cheap, because they're not a top size bulb. They're a small grade of bulb, and they won't flower like a top size bulb will with the consistency. So tell us about what's all right. involved in the grading process, so that people can make an informed decision when they buy tulip bulbs.
Again, all the tulips are graded by centimeter circumference, which is real confusing for Americans.
Certainly. Just the word circumference alone is enough to confuse most people.
A top-sized tulip is really a 12 or a 13 centimeter circumference.
Okay, so by doing so, you'll get consistent flowers that will give you predictable results. And when you see them growing in parks or other manicured landscape areas, those are almost always top-sized bulbs that have all been planted properly, and that way you get that consistent flower height and consistent flowering across all of the bulbs. The small bulbs, some of them won't even flower at all, correct, if they're really juvenile?
Some of them will flower, or the flower will be half the size of a 12 and up. You know,
correct.
You often see 10 centimeter bulbs in the box stores. Plus, they get there in August when it's 90 degrees, and they set. And you're talking about, instead of in my cooler at 50 degrees, they're outside in 90 degree weather. You know, it doesn't do the bulbs any good.
And that's why people say, well, I don't have luck with them. Well, luck really is not a part of it. It's about understanding what you're dealing with and getting the right products. And you can be assured of having predictable results when you do that. Michael, we got a question over there.
Yeah, we got a text message. It says, can you use the lasagna method in the ground? I'm new to bulb planting, and I want to create spring and summer continually blooming area that's about 10 by 10. Thanks, Helen and fellow Dutchman Rudy from Wakanda, Illinois.
All right. So these are some folks from Illinois that are inquiring. So they're obviously are a more northern climb. What do you say about that, Jack?
Yes, definitely. You can use the same lasagna planting outdoors. Of course, in Illinois, you probably won't put pansies on top. But other than that, you can use the lasagna planting, same system outdoors in a 10 by 10 square feet. You know, you use about 50 bulbs of each, 50 tulips on the bottom, then put 50 daffodils on the top and about 100 or 150 crocus on the top. That will make you a nice display.
Yeah, it'll make a great display. There's a little bit of work involved.
There's a bunch of work in this one.
There's some digging that's going to have to happen. So,
now, you could either excavate it out, or if you had multiple bulb planters that were going to be deep enough, you could probably go through. But I think I'm going to dig this 10 by 10 square.
I don't see how you can do it without excavating it and actually, you know, doing it like that's how you can't do a lasagna by placing the noodles through the sauce. And you know, you kind of have to layer it out there. You know,
guys, keep talking about lasagna. I think I need to make that.
Okay, well, why don't you bring it in next Saturday morning? And we'll have
it be all gone.
Oh, but it sounds fantastic. Yeah, that'd be a neat project. But boy, that is a bunch of digging. If you had a small backhoe, it might be an easy way to go about doing.
But basically, the point that I want to make. Is bulb? It's now the time to plant bulbs. That's the first thing, and the second thing is that bulb planting is fairly easy. Just get your soil right and do your thing.
Yeah. Another good method for people who maybe don't want to dig out a large area is use one of these earth auger bits on a cordless drill, which does a nice job of being able to drill down to the necessary depth. And then you can get the bulb down there and get it positioned, and that way you don't have to excavate everything. So that's another way to do it. However, you got to be careful if you're doing a lasagna method like that to know where those spots are and drill successively. Do your deep ones first, and then work up the level.
That would be the way to go about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Get a long one with multiple pieces of duct tape or something around it to show your depth on it.
Maybe you've got one of those big guides on the that'll
just get the guy from the cable company to come over. He's got every drill bit on.
Well, and if you're digging that many holes, you might want to get the one call to come out and make sure that you're not drilling through right. some wire or some other utility that's buried in the ground. Well, Jack, we've about covered this topic here. What else do we need to keep folks mindful of as they're getting into the bulb planting season? And of course, we are in the midst of it right now.
Yes. Well, consider your indoor bulb planting with amaryllis and with paper whites for having flowers in the middle of the winter. Then from now on till Christmas time, get your bulbs in, your tulips, daffodils, and what have you. And then in the springtime, plant the things like gladiolas, dahlias, lilies, Dutch lilies, and caladiums, and of course, don't forget the elephant ears and what have you. So,
There's the great thing about planting bulbs is that they add interest to the garden year round. It's just a question of you got to think a couple of seasons ahead for everything that you're going to do. At least one season ahead. If you're going to plant gladiolas, for instance, you're not going to have those unless you plant those in the spring and then they flower in the summer. Does the same rule still apply? My dad used to always tell people if you're going to plant gladiolas in the spring for summer flowering, that you should plant some about every 2 weeks in order to extend the flower time. Is that still considered to be true?
Yeah, basically commercial flower growers plant every 2 to 3 weeks gladiolas, so they have a constant supply of flowers.
There's nothing says summer like a beautiful cut stems of gladiolas. They are absolutely fabulous. Well, Jack, we want to thank you for coming on this morning. It's great to catch up for a bit, my friend. And so I know you are a diehard Carolina Panthers fan. So how are you feeling about football season shaping up this year?
Well, I really watch a lot more soccer than I do
or as they call it in Europe, football.
Because I don't consider football.
Right. Football is what we call soccer here, but American right. football. I know you're a Carolina Panthers. We talked about doing some football games together. We never have gotten around to it, I might add, but we have talked about it.
Yeah, yes.
This is not going to be the year to do
that. I enjoyed being there for you today. You know, it's been about 40 years ago since I did your last interview on the radio
time does get away. We promise to get you on quicker than 40 years in the next interval. Jack,
looks like it's Marlboro
that will be good. Well, would be a great time in the springtime when we can talk about the summer flowering bulbs,
and I promise you we will do that. And you can go out, and if you want to see Jack's website, it is MarlboroBulb.com, correct?
Right.
All right, Jack. Thanks much, buddy. You have a great one, and happy. Halloween's the next holiday coming up. I know that's probably a big holiday in Holland, right?
I don't know whether when I was little they didn't celebrate it, but I don't know what they do now.
Do they give out Dutch bulbs when they trick or treat? No. I don't know.
Dark chocolate. Chocolate.
Jack, take care, buddy. Great to see you today. Bye-bye.
All righty.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah, MarlboroBulb.com. And, man, I'm telling you, they've got a bunch of stuff out there. Anemones and begonias. I mean,
types of bulbs than you have any idea about. And I don't know. We started off the show with there was one fly.
Six of them.
I don't know where they've all come from. So, I don't know whether they're visible that we are distracted by the flies.
It's that or something else we'd be distracted by, for sure.
Yeah, it's
I want to talk more about this idea that you've been on the air for 40 years.
Yeah, I well, now, it might have been, because, I was, from time to time, my very first exposure to being on the radio was on Les Jamison's show on
Les, tell them Les sent you.
And Les was a Les Jamison was a wonderful host, a Brit himself,
yes,
and a wonderful, engaging guy. He amazed me how that as soon as the on-air life would go off, he would immediately start cursing.
Oh yeah, he was legendary for his vernacular commentary.
Oh, his vernacular was incredible. He had quite the stream of consciousness, as it were, with respect to that. So
I think Josh is on me to change the input, but I don't have the ability.
Do you need to talk about Bates real quick before?
Yes, we do, and thank you, Josh, for that reminder. Yes, we will
for some reason.
Yes, of course, this is Bates Nursery and Garden Center. We want to invite you to come out and see us today. We've got everything.
Everything.
I can't tell you what we don't have. Let me tell you about what, you know, Jack talked about that lasagna planting. We actually have planters in the greenhouse area that have tulips planted down under in the bottom of the planter with pansies already on top, already done up for you. So you can take those out and either put them right on your patio and enjoy them all winter long, or because they're in a mache pot, you can actually plant that directly into the ground. So there's an idea you can, if you don't want to get into doing all that planting yourself, we've taken care of that for you. Go down to the greenhouse area along with all the other pansies, violas, panolas, chrysanthemums, all the other cool season plants, cabbage, kale, and the cool season vegetable plants as well, of cabbage, kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. All those things are available here at Bates Nursery and Garden Center, in addition to a great many things like ornamental grasses are one of the most overlooked things in the landscape, but not in the fall because they really put on the shows. You need to see what an extensive selection we have of those. And, of course, when it comes to trees, nobody can hold a candle. We have got such a selection of trees, and it doesn't matter if you're talking Japanese maple or fruiting trees or shade trees or ornamental trees. We've got a variety and selection unequaled in the Middle Tennessee area. So come out and see us. Take photographs with your smartphone or camera or your tablet. Bring those along with you, and our landscape professionals will look at those and help you get the right plants in the right place the first time. That's the way we do it here at Bates Nursery and Garden Center. And, of course, if you're a Bates Rewards member, you get my weekly newsletter. And a special thanks to Unexpected Milestone. It was never a goal of mine, but we've now crossed over 20,000 subscribers on our newsletter. So if you subscribe to In the Garden with Bates Nursery, we appreciate that. Thank you, Michael. And if you go to BatesNursery.com, you can simply scroll down the page where it says newsletter and enter your name and information in there. And if you decide at any point you no longer want to get it, you can just unsubscribe. And this week, of course, it's a intensely gardening issue, and it's called Extra Crazy with Cheese this week. So
it's kind of lasagna theme, so
I guess you could. So, you know, you're welcome to check that out and see what goes on in the inner sanctum of my brain. So check that out along with some other gardening.
Halloween's coming.
Yes, it is. So check that out over at BatesNursery.com. We are conveniently located 1 mile north of Briley Parkway at exit 19 on White's Creek Pike. That's just minutes from Rivergate, Opry Mills, Nashville West, and I'll tell you, it is worth the drive from anywhere. So we invite you to come out and see us. We're open from 9 until 4 o'clock Monday through Saturday and noon until 4 on Sundays. Bates Nursery and Garden Center, beautifying Nashville since 1932.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great place to come out and see. I mean,
so you ready to go on your computer there, Josh?
Sure, we can go there if you want to.
Is that what you were tapping me on the leg for?
No, I was just being friendly.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But ladies and gentlemen, you've heard about the saga of the redoing of the deck at the proving grounds.
Now, really heard good things about this product.
Well, this product that this is the one that the project manager chose that we were going to be using. Now, this is the finished product. This is the Bear Advanced Deck Over.
Now, was there a primer or something you used before that?
There are two additional steps. There's a stripping process, and I have those images in a different file, but we'll get those in there.
And just stop you for just a moment.
Okay.
Anytime that you are either staining or painting any surface, the ultimate success in longevity and how well it's going to hold up and look, it's all into preparation.
For all intents and purposes, correct.
If you prepare poorly, you can expect to get similar results as far as how good it looks in the long term.
Now, and
decks are the most challenging area of all because
they're outside.
They're facing right up against the sun.
You can't really walk on them.
And they are
traffic areas, so they're not like a wall. But this particular product, there are a couple of different varieties out there. This is the one that we chose. And folks, that can, it's like painting with cake batter. It is that thick. I mean,
it has a lot of paint in there.
There's a lot of solids, is the way that they used to say that. But at the end of the day,
had that picture blown up.
I had that picture blown up. But when we started with this, okay. And this is the one that we started with. Now, again, the variegated look on a deck is not for everybody.
Yeah. But you did that because you had boards that needed to be replaced.
We had boards that needed to be replaced.
Now, how did you determine which ones you were going to replace? I mean, they're all the same age.
She went through there and said that one, that one, that one, that one, and that one.
Okay, that's an acceptable method. Okay.
So this is prior to either the cleaning. This is after the new boards had been installed. You can tell that the purple ones are the reddish kind of a color versus the new green treated.
Right.
That was the process there. Now we also then you look at the rail system, because if you have a deck, you probably have a rail around it. Now this one is where the deck over really does a really great job. You notice the seasoning cracks that are that are showing up there.
Yeah.
That product fills very, very well. Now we're in the process of getting the balusters back onto the deck, so I'll bring in some finished pictures next week. But for all intents and purposes, those cracks are gone.
And that's just by using the stain or the pigment itself, or
no. We again, you have to strip the old surface,
right.
Old stuff off. Then you have to clean what you stripped off, and then you go in through a prepping process. Now, what Diana's doing here is that she goes in there and you kind of fill the cracks, as it were, as you're going along with it, and then
you're actually, to be clear, you're actually filling that with the paint product.
With the paint.
It's that thick. It's able to go in there and get you that much volume.
And edging and stuff like that. And then two coats. And you see that's part of the prep process, too. This is not an easy thing to do. And you don't want it to be raining. You don't want it to be too hot. It dries very quickly. It is water-soluble paint. So.
And how long do you need for it to stay dry after it's applied? How long does it need?
We gave it a couple of hours. Now, you're not going to put a lot of heavy traffic.
The foot traffic? You can walk
so far?
On, okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. So far, it was what we've seen because, the humidity last weekend was an absolutely perfect weekend for it. So, I mean, you get low humidity.
It looks similar this week.
Right. And so as things go along, you can see that, she chose two colors, and we complicated the matter by using a different color on the rail and the perimeter of the board.
You wouldn't have it any other way, would you?
No, we couldn't have it any other way. But unabashed plug, they're not endorsed. We don't get paid by the Bear people to do this. And the reason I bring this up is that I had told Mrs. Bates earlier in the year that I had not found a paint product that I would view as acceptable. Now, folks, when you go to get this stuff, take some money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my buddy Al Fick, who's really a master painter, and he's the guy I've observed the meticulous amount of time he spends on preparation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exact same product that he recommends.
Yeah, and it, but it will cost you some bucks.
What does it cost you if you don't use it? Is a lot of times, it'll cost you having to redo it.
Oh,
and if you're going to go to the trouble to use that high dollar stuff, you want to go to the trouble to do the proper amount of preparation.
No, and I'm not griping so much about the prices when you start with it, you need to get it complete to finish. It's going to be a couple of $3 a square foot at the end of the day. Well, so the bigger the deck, the more square footage, plus the time. I mean, we've literally started working on this spring. So
but if you can get 5 or 6 years out of it as opposed to 2 or 3, it's worth the difference.
And we're probably going to be about a break-even thing if you look at some of the composite products that are out there now. But this way you have a much broader color choice, and you can do it yourself should you choose to. It's not quite as problematic. But, yeah, folks, it's coming together for us at the Proving Grounds there. All righty, folks, music means Michael's going to run us off the air here.
Hey, it's that time.
You told me to give you guys an hour.
An hour?
Okay. And he gave us an hour, Josh.
He gave us
An hour.
And we got it done.
That's okay. But next
Saturday, we appreciate it.
Yep. Next Saturday morning, we're going to come back for another hour, if Michael's so amenable. We'll see what's going on.
I think so.
You know, we may go raid a hotel here. We're threatening it. We're going to go to a hotel, and we're going to do a radio show. So, folks, if you're listening, we'll be out there for you. But every Saturday morning, we come to you from the green room here at Bates Nursery and Garden Center. For Michael and David, my name's Josh Carey. We'll see you here next Saturday morning.